It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. During yesterday's program, we heard about the passing of local TV icon Bill Chilly Billy Cardill, who hosted the longtime late-night horror movie show Chiller Theater. He was 87. In addition to Chiller Theater, Cardill appeared in the original Night of the Living Dead. And as a broadcaster, in the early days of Pittsburgh television, he hosted Studio Wrestling and the afternoon Big Show. Chilly Billy Cardill joined us in studio for our 2014 Halloween show. We discussed his career and what kept him in Pittsburgh.
I did stock car racing. I did the news. I did the weather. I did the sports. And I'm glad I stayed in Pittsburgh. I had a lot of opportunities, but here are great.
But what kept you here?
The people and the job. I like variety. I was offered a job up in Buffalo when they first went on, and they said, you can announce or direct. I says, no, I do both. I write my own material, I do direct. No, you can do through one, et cetera, et cetera. So that kept me away. I had some offers to go east, but I had just gotten married. So I like Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, the people were nice. I almost came close to leaving, however, I just had a great life, and my family was pretty well entrenched here.
Thank you, Bill Chilly Billy Cardill, for being an essential part of Pittsburgh. And we're joined now in studio by Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto. Mayor Peduto, first of all, thank you for joining us on our final daily edition of Essential Pittsburgh. It's great to have you with us.
Well, as a fan of the show, thank you for what you've delivered to the city of Pittsburgh. And I know there's a lot of people listening right now that are listening with a heavy heart.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm. And on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. There are a lot of things, Mayor Peduto, that I'd like to try and cover today, but I wanted to have you share your thoughts about Bill Cardill. I'm guessing that you might have some memories of growing up and watching Chilly Billy on television.
A lot. I mean, people don't even realize that Saturday Night Live was pushed off. It wasn't live in the Pittsburgh market when it first came on for the first couple of years because of the popularity of Chiller Theater. I've had the chance to get to know Bill Cardill and actually did a proclamation for him when I was on city council when he was retiring. And it was the first time that we did a proclamation with the city of Pittsburgh and the city of Sharon, where he was from in the Shenango Valley, both proclaiming that day Bill Cardill Day. He was also a huge Penguins fan and sat in the same section as I sat for decades. And about 3 months ago, in between a second and third period, I got to just sit down and catch up with him. He's got a great family. They're very involved. And, you know, he goes beyond icon status in Pittsburgh. He was influential in so many people's lives. And he did so in a way that was caring and compassionate because it was real. He loved Pittsburgh. He loved people. He was a good man. And he's going to be sorely missed.
He will. And I think a lot of us of a certain age, and you and I are pretty close to the same age, remember growing up and watching Chiller Theater and Studio Wrestling.
Studio Wrestling was bigger for me than Chiller Theater. Yeah.
It was a part of, you know, that was Saturday. You watched the wrestling and you
Absolutely.
Watched Chiller Theater.
Yep.
And he became, you know, I had two brothers and, you know, I'm the oldest, so I was often the guy left in charge of, you know, if my parents went out, which was, you know, often on Saturday night, like a lot of people did. And so, you know, Chilly Billy was kind of like the babysitter for the three of us, you know, because we'd watched the wrestling. And then later, Chiller Theater came on. And as my brothers were falling asleep, I'd be sitting there watching him. And he was the guy who kept me company till mom and dad came home. And that was a big part of childhood. And I'm guessing that's similar to the stories that a lot of other people in this city have of remembering Bill Cardill.
I remember being young and trying to stay up late enough to see it, you know, when my brothers would actually watch it, and I would do everything I could to keep my eyes open to be able to see it. And then watching it with friends and having sleepovers and that type of thing. But then studio wrestling on Saturdays, and his interviews ringside with Bruno and Dominic DiNucci and Larry Zbysko and all of those guys that were, you know, just instrumental. And I would watch it with my grandfather religiously. And he just had such a great presence. Like, I can't think of studio wrestling and that era without thinking of him as the voice.
Bill Cardill, so much a part of Pittsburgh, of the generation that came of age in the 60s and 70s watching TV, when local television really was an integral part of life, much more so.
That's all it was. Yeah. I mean, there was no real, other than the nightly news.
So thank you, Bill Cardill, and I'm so glad that we had a chance to have him on the show when he appeared a couple of years ago. I was trying to figure out how to transition to a question about whether you watched any of the Republican National Convention this week, and a quote from Michael Medved saying delegates chanting "lock her up" was like a scene from Frankenstein would work, because that was a movie that showed up on Schiller Theater. So did you see
That's a good transition.
Did you see any of the convention, particularly Donald Trump's speech accepting the nomination for president, and what did you make of it?
I watched the speech at a little place called Cappy's Cafe in Shadyside with about 12 other people on closed caption, and I kept blurting out things during it, and I had to stop myself from doing
that.
Boy,
do I wish I was there to hear that.
Yeah, it was like, what's that show? Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah. Where they're talking over the movie, yeah. Right?
So I just had to stop myself. So I became addicted to it. I really did. I would go and I would stay up. I'd fall asleep on my couch basically every day this week, just going between Colbert, Seth Meyers, CNN, Fox. Just every time one would hit a commercial, I'd go to the next and watch and watch and watch and watch and watch. And I'm going Sunday to the Democratic convention, and I don't think I will be as fixated as I was watching the Republican convention, because the commenters, the opinions, the journalists, and the comedians made it such an interesting convention. I've been watching conventions since I was in second grade. I was bitten by the bug very early in 1972. I cannot
govern.
And Nixon. But I can't think of a convention. I just can't think of one that I actually became compulsively obsessed with watching.
Well, it was certainly an unusual convention. Yeah, that word came up a lot. And the Republicans have taken their stand, and Donald Trump, whether you agree with him or not, articulated the position of the party last night. How do you think, Mayor Peduto, how do you think the Democrats should respond to the rhetoric coming from the Republicans this week when they have their turn in Philadelphia?
The high road. So I think it's provide a vision of where this country needs to go during the next 4 years, provide a vision on domestic policy, which seemed to be missing from this convention, and provide a opportunity for all people to be a part of it and really reach out to every person in this country. I think that the focus was kind of narrow within the RNC, and I think that this will have the opportunity to expand upon it, but take the high road. I would be so proud if I leave Philadelphia and Donald Trump's name was not mentioned once. That not one speaker who got up there mentioned his name.
You know, that's not going to happen.
I know, but it would be so amazing, and the contrast would be so stark that it would just be like, ignore him and just say what we are going to do. I know that won't happen, but it would be kind of cool if it did.
What will your role be at the convention? What sorts of things
I'm
are
DJing,
you?
I'm DJing, so I'll be spinning the discs. No,
so you're going to be doing, yes. While Hillary's giving her acceptance.
I'm going to come up like he did with that WWE entrance and the smoke going, and you'll see me spinning some records. No, I'm
rapping
going.
Billy P.
Yep. I'm going to, I'll be speaking with an organization called the Progressive Policy Institute on Sunday. I'll be on a panel with Mayor de Blasio with the National League of Cities. Mayor Reed from Atlanta, Mayor Buckhorn from Tampa, and I. Then I have a couple hundred, it seems like, different events with different organizations The Center for American Progress, Local Progress, a lot of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party that I'm going to be with other elected officials. And then I intend to be there in the evenings in the Pennsylvania delegation. Every morning starts with the Pennsylvania delegation's breakfast. It's where you get your credentials. That's where you hear about what's going to happen that day. You have different speakers that come and talk to you. And then throughout the day, there seems to be about 5 million events that you choose from to be able to go to, and the ones that I'll be speaking at. And then the evening over to the convention center. So I've never gone. I've been involved in politics professionally since 1989, and I have never been to a convention.
So wow.
The party stuff has been secondary. I mean, that I like the policy stuff more, but I'm fascinated, and I think this is a really good year to go, so it should be kind of interesting.
I almost got to go to one as an alternate delegate, and I won't say which party because I'm impartial, of course, right. But I still haven't gone and would like to go someday, so I am excited for you that you're having that opportunity. 412-246-2002 if you want to join the conversation with Mayor Peduto, talk about the political conventions, talk about your memories of Chili Billy Cardill. We have David on the line from Squirrel Hill. And it's not just any David, but it's David Johnson of Channel 11. Wow. Hi, David. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Hey, Mayor.
Hey,
great
David.
Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I love to hear your comments about the Republican convention, as you will be attending the Democratic one, and I will be there as well. So, you know, if you see me hanging around with the camera with that look on my face to do an interview with you, you'll understand, I'm sure.
I will put down the beer.
First of all, I'm going to just quickly talk about Bill Cardell, because I knew him from the moment I got here, and, you know, I can really hear both of you, Paul and Mayor, your memories are the one thing that I missed out on, because I arrived here too late in 1985. So I missed Chiller Theater and I missed the wrestling. But of course, I heard through Bill and many others tell the stories. And I guess that he was so nice. He was always smiling. He was always upbeat, you know, in a business where we can get kind of cynical and this and that. He was not that. He was a very positive man. And the only other comment I will make is he was one of those old, true broadcasters. Hmm. You can hear it in the quality of his voice. You got hired in part back in the 50s and 60s because you had a deep, resonant voice. And he could do anything, as he said, news, weather, sports, all the telethons I worked with him on, the wrestling, and his work with MDA, Muscular Dystrophy Association, went far beyond just those moments on TV every year. He was one of Jerry Lewis's absolute favorites. He was known around the world for his work for the telethon and NBA. So those are great memories I have. And one other thing quickly on Cardill is, you know, occasionally in a live newscast, things don't go well. And he did the noon weather when I arrived to be the noon anchor. And he would always just kind of smile and pat me on the shoulder and say, David, don't worry about it. FTA. What's that, Bill? Follow the action. Whatever you see on the monitor, whatever they're doing, just talk about that. And that's that old-time broadcaster able to just do anything attitude, which I learned a lot under him, and I was honored to know him, and my thoughts and prayers go out to his family. All right, so
David, yeah, let me just jump in and interject one other thing. I think Bill and I and everyone listening really appreciate your perspective and what you have to say about Bill. What I think was amazing, especially with Chiller Theater, was the amount of material he would come up with. You know,
yes.
That was a double feature for most of its incarnation, Chiller Theater.
Right.
So there was all that time, all those breaks and between the movies and the introductions and the things that he would do. And he didn't just fill the time. He very inventively came up with different skits, material that he or others had to have written and produced. And
right.
One thing I remember in particular was a thing called, and this was before we had the T, the Pittsburgh subway system. And it was an imaginary subway stop where he's interviewing, and you never know who was going to come, you know, walking through there, you know, everybody from, you know, Johnny Costa to who, you know, Mr. Rogers. You never know who was going to show up from one week to the next. And I think a lot of it was just ad-libbed, and it was just great television. So I wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, those are great comments. And a lot of that was live.
And, oh, yeah.
He would always comment on, well, you know, if it's taped, it's different than it's live. And he did so much live TV and was just amazing at it. And to the very end, and he, again, the broadcasting, loved broadcasting on TV, later on radio, which was one of his last jobs, but he kept up with that telethon until the very end. So he's a remarkable man. He's one of, I put him on the Mount Rushmore of Pittsburgh iconic personalities, along with Myron, you know, Bill Burns, Paul Long, DiNardo. He's up there with those guys. And he is a representative from Channel 11, which I was always very proud of.
We should put that on Mount Washington. You know, we have our own.
Yes, in front of that sign.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
There you
I
go. Agree.
So let me just throw one question out to the mayor. And, Paul, forgive me, as a reporter, I'm a natural interviewer and questioner. So
please,
by
all.
I know you have this on your mind, too. For Mayor Peduto, there's high negative still for Hillary Clinton. And obviously in a convention, maybe with some exceptions at the Republican convention, you're generally speaking to the converted. What does she have to do to make people forget about the emails and Benghazi and all that and shore up what's needed to win the election in November?
Well, it's too late to inoculate yourself because the Republicans have already defined the issue, so she can't get ahead of it. So she has to address it. She, in her speech, needs to be able to talk about it and not be on the defensive about it and say, they're wrong, I'm right, but be able to say, I know there are questions that Americans have about how I handled this. Let me explain some of the situation that was involved. I know that there's questions about the email. Let me explain part of it and then move on. Because if she allows it to linger, if it bleeds, it will be an issue that will drag her down throughout the campaign. But if she can somehow seal it and then move on, she has a lot better chance to be able to convert undecideds.
David, I hope that answers your question. And I think we still have David with us. At any rate, David Johnson of Channel 11 News, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Paul. Always a pleasure. I always learn something listening to your show.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
See you in Philly, Dave.
Take care.
Thanks.
And let's go to Carlana in Pittsburgh at 412-246-2002, who has a comment. Go ahead.
I was calling because you said you were going to mention the demonstration, the Black Lives Matter demonstration. And I wanted to point out something I think is a really serious issue, which is a number of the police shootings around the country were initiated by 911 calls. The person calling was either gave erroneous information or the information that was relayed to the police was not entirely correct. And I think a special task force or something should look at the 911 situation because I call 911 frequently to report things. And sometimes I've, you know, reported a serious crime, and other times I was erroneous in the information I had. So I know it can go, you know, I've been on both sides of it. But the thing is, if police show up and start shooting on the basis of a 911 call, that's how a lot of these tragedies happen. And the 911 is the key. Some sort of study should be done of the 911 calls and how they're relayed to the police and maybe special training focusing on the 911 calls for the police because
okay.
That's how they are getting into trouble.
All right, Carlana. Well, Mayor, I don't know how you want to react to that.
No, she's absolutely right. And that's not only something that is being looked at right now, especially given the fact that officers are being told to be cautious and trying to determine the legitimacy of the call before they're being sent out, as well as a lot of other factors to be able to take their safety into concern. But that's something that's looked at on a constant basis. We've merged our 911 services into a countywide basis, and there's a constant communication between the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police and 911 to improve upon it.
Between the incidents in Dallas and Baton Rouge, we've seen the murders of at least 8 police officers in this country this month. Supporters of law and order and the rule of law are understandably concerned. What police procedures do you think should be changed in the wake of this?
Well, I don't think that anything immediate should be done in a time of crisis that and otherwise to that would protect both the public and the police. I think that what needs to be looked at are a lot of the core issues of why we have this great division throughout the country from poor minority communities and police bureaus. And within the city of Pittsburgh, that means one thing. That means we have to work together. That means we don't pick sides. We don't choose one over the other. We work together to solve those types of problems. The basis of the problems is poverty. And when there is a cycle of poverty that goes generation after generation, it builds hopelessness. And when you have hopelessness in a community, you have crime that takes off. You have working class people, our police officers. These aren't, you know, corporate leaders or anybody. These are folks who grew up in similar types of situations. And then they get targeted as the bad guys when their mission and why they joined the force was to be the good guy. And you have this division that creates that and a feeling like you're not being respected or appreciated or even trusted. And then you have a situation that will occur. And then all of a sudden, the division gets wider. And then a retaliation, and the division gets wider. And then a situation, and the division gets wider. So it's going to take years. I'm not one to think that there's just some quick fix you can do. And the key to it is communication. It's the officers and the community sitting down and being open and talking openly about how each of them feel, because both of them have heavy hearts right now. Our officers feel bad. Our community feels bad. And just blaming each other is not going to solve a thing. It's not going to solve one thing. The only way to solve it is by working together. So Sunday was a very good day for Pittsburgh. Sunday, the ministers from the Hill District gathered together to pray for peace down at Freedom Corner, and the community came out to join them. But who else came out was the command staff of the Pittsburgh Police. And ad-libbed at the end. We were going to end with a song and sing together. Pastor Grigsby, Pastor Grayson, asked the command staff to come in front of them. And each the assistant chief and the commanders walked over, and they had them stand there in the front of everybody, and then they laid their hands on their shoulders. And the ministers began to pray for the officers. And they began to pray for the officers who were standing in front of them and for all the officers of the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police. And everyone stood there and prayed with them. And a little kid came up to join his mom, and he grabbed the hand of the commander who was next to him. And you could see in the eyes of the commanders and the chief as they were being prayed over, almost a sense of relief. There was like this big pressure that had been taken off. And I think the community felt it as well. I think inherently that's the way that we all feel we should go. And I think we're going through these rough waters right now that is keeping us from getting there. So what can you do? Anybody listening? Use social media. The next time you see somebody who's saying something bad or choosing one side and blasting the other side, say, hey, do you think this will really solve the problem? Or do you think we're just addressing the symptoms of the problem? And have that conversation about how we can heal within a community and then how we can build the trust back between our officers and our lower income neighborhoods. It's not unsolvable, but it starts with communication.
You said at the rally last Sunday, and it really was a very touching scene in the Hill District, you said that the nation can learn from the examples of past civil rights leaders.
Yeah, without a doubt. I've been reading the sermons of Martin Luther King for about the past 3 weeks, just going back and finding the different sermons that he was giving at the different churches during that time. And my God, what he had to face. He was facing not only persecution of trying to stand up for basic rights like registering people to vote, but people being murdered for doing it and for registering people. And I've yet to find the time when he finally said, okay, enough, we've got to take this on and fight them back. And no, he took the high road every single time. And he made it so crystal clear that the only way to find the solution that is in goodness is through goodness. And that the only way to take on hate and divisiveness is through love. And he was consistent. And as we're going through these times, and all of us have heavy hearts, and we just don't know what's going on in this country and in this world, it's a constant drumbeat of officers being killed, citizens being killed, unrest in Turkey, people being killed in France, over and over again, like it's 1968. These guys were in the front of that, and they were able to do it in a way that not only changed this country, but changed the entire way of getting things accomplished in this country. So, yeah, we have to learn from them. We have to look back and see how they were able to do the great deeds that they did. And at the same time, their actions spoke for their policies.
And I think when I was asking the question about changing police procedures, I was doing that in the context of trying to help police officers feel safer. And, you know, there's been the talk of doubling up on patrols, yep. That kind of thing.
I check every time I drive by a car. I just look to see that there's two people in it. Yeah, it's there's a whole series of those changes that have already been implemented. But it really does come down to that officer who's out there is not going to feel secure. That officer that's out there is not going to feel that they're being respected, even though they're working in those communities because they chose to do that. And we have to get back to a point where it's both ways. Is there violence in African-American communities being done through law enforcement? Yes. Yes. And you have to recognize that. Are there good people that are police officers? Yes. And you have to recognize that. And once you can recognize those two things and both sides can come together and say, yes, we realize that, then you have the potential to heal it. As long as you say no, or you just say the one side, there's never an ability to get to the middle. There's never an ability to solve it. So we all have a responsibility of being the peacemakers in this.
My guest is Mayor Bill Peduto. We'll continue with him on Essential Pittsburgh. This is 90.5 WESA. It's the Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're hearing a YouTube sound clip from last night's Cheap Trick concert in the area, performing their signature song, Surrender. Something about this version, though, it sounds a little different. What is it? What am I hearing here? Oh, wait! That was Mayor Bill Peduto singing along. The mayor with us in the studio. How did that happen, Mayor Peduto?
Unbelievable. So back in 1977... listening to Heaven Tonight, my brother had bought the album. My buddy Rick Chadwick and I said, oh my God, this is the greatest rock and roll band ever, Cheap Trick. And by 79, the Budokan came out. We'd have already seen them a couple of times. And go forward about 38 years, my buddy Rick and I traveled up to New York to see them inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I traveled out to Boulder, Colorado, where he lives, to see them at the Fox Theater performing three nights in a row. Probably seen the band about 20 some times. I don't even know how many times anymore. But all-time favorite band, like the band that brought music to your life. And my buddy Rick flew in from Colorado yesterday. And we had been planning this for a while. And I had an opportunity to do a meet and greet where there was a bunch of fans that got a chance to shake their hand. And they're like, are you really the mayor of Pittsburgh? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, guys, you were influential in my life. And so Rick Nielsen, the lead guitarist, said, you got to come and watch the show by my guitars. And I'm like, okay, I'll do that. And my buddy Rick and I were sitting there, and I'm looking over at him, and he has tears in his eyes. And we're just, and then during the, they have like a little break where Tom Peterson, the bassist, is playing a solo, and Robin Zander and Rick, the lead singer, and Rick Nielsen come over, and they're like, Surrender or Dream Police? And they're like, oh, you're asking me? And they're like, yeah. I said, oh, definitely Surrender. I said, you're going to play it. And they're like, no, you're going to sing it.
Wow.
And I'm just like, and my buddy's looking at me, goes, you have to do it. You have to do it. I'm going to videotape it. You have to do it. So, yeah, I did it. But it was one of those bucket list things. And I'm sitting there, Robin Zander's mouthing the words to the Surrender to me. And all of a sudden, it's like 1977, sitting upstairs in the house I grew up in, listening to it on, you know, the old stereo system. And I'm just like, how the hell did this ever happen? But it was, you know, I'm a music fan, and that was one of the things that I got to share with my best friend, who we went through this whole journey with this band together. And that stuff's priceless.
Well, and I have to tell you that a lot of times people in your position are invited to do things like that, or invite themselves to do things like that, and embarrass themselves. And
I embarrass myself.
No,
there's no doubt.
No, watch it. Hang on a second. Okay. I'm going to say this, and I mean it, and I wouldn't say it if it weren't true. Okay. You sounded pretty darn good. I mean, you did a good job.
Okay, thank
all
you.
All right. He's just glowing over here. The afterglow. I mean, this was just last night. I was half expecting you not, you know, like I thought, oh, this guy's going to be, he's
so
such a rock star. We may never see him again.
I was so amped up. Afterwards, they're just like, you know, hey, and we're talking, and I'm like, you know, next time you guys come to town, I got to take you to the Roberto Clemente Museum because I know they're big baseball fans, and they're like, that would be great. And I'm just like, holy crap, this is Cheap Trick, and I'm just hanging out with them. Yeah, it was amazing. All right, I'll get over it in about 3 years.
Right. All right, we've got just a few minutes left. What is the latest with the old Civic Arena site? Can you bring us up to date on apparently the Penguins are talking to three companies. They won't say who at this point. So I'm going to ask you, who are the potential tenants?
Well, we got Cheap Trick International,
right.
the international headquarters of Cheap Trick fans. No, that those are negotiations that they have closed doors because there are several other developers that are also pursuing. Everyone's chasing the same clients, basically, in this town. So I'll let that just happen in that world of brokerage. But the potential for the office development looks promising. So that should be moving along. But it's really the housing development that we're keyed in on, and that's the one that has been lagging. We had a really good meeting with them. That seems now to be back on track, and we are requiring that it follow the community's protocol on affordable housing, which also seems to be back on track. So they had a little bit of business that they had to take care of over the past couple of months, so they were kind of busy on other things, and that's great and fun. But at the same time, we want to see this development get moving. So I think the meeting that we had with David Morehouse and Travis and the rest of the team basically put it back to where we were before, and hopefully see both developments, the office and the housing, happening before the end of the year.
Have you had your day with the Stanley Cup yet?
Did. So we got a few hours with it. We scheduled each council member. They each had 5 minutes. The controller had 5 minutes. The city clerk had 5 minutes. I had about 15 minutes. And then everybody on the fifth floor, all the directors, the assistant directors, and the Pittsburgh Police hockey team. Had a chance to be with it as well.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
We are down to less than 2 minutes here anyway, so the two-minute warning is coming through. You've been appearing with us regularly on Essential Pittsburgh for over 2.5 years since you took office in January of 2014. How would you we've got like 30 seconds, but how would you assess what's happened and your performance over the last 30 months or so?
I would say that it's more of a team assessment, and the team has really taken off. So that first year was bumpy, and people were learning their jobs basically at the same time that they were learning, for many of them, about Pittsburgh. The directors, the assistant directors, those folks that are in critical positions and data analytics and other things are now all off and running on their own. And if it seems like there's a lot of different things happening from government, it's because it is. My job now has become to basically corral it and make it so that it works together. But my directors and chiefs have decided the course that they'll be taking over the next few years, and they're running at this point.
Real quick question. In a tweet, what would the mayor's DJ name be? We're down to just a matter of seconds.
Billy P. There was something that somebody had given me. I can't remember.
I like rapping Billy P.
Rapping Billy P.
I've enjoyed rapping with you.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it too.
We certainly will be talking with you in the future, but I'd like to thank you for your many appearances on Essential Pittsburgh and your contributions to the show. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
From the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, Paul. And I said it to you, and I'll say it to your listeners. I get more social media comments from this show than anything else I do in local media.
Well, we're glad to hear it. And again, thank you so much. Coming up, an interview with Megan Klingenberg of the U.S. women's soccer team. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.